I think I should, yeah, let's try it there. That might work a little better. The title is Optimal Treatment Dispersions in Rectangular Areas. And I need to give credit for the term experiments in rectangular areas to R.A. Bailey. Some of you might be familiar with his work. He has done a lot of theoretical work on randomizations. And the specific citation is experiments in rectangular areas. He uses the term undesirable layout. Okay. Well, what is an undesirable layout? We're going to explore this. And we're going to do this using simulated uniformity trials. All the joy of a uniformity trial without going out in the dirt. So we're going to start with yield monitor data. And this is an example of, this is the data I'm working with. I got it, stole it from the SDSU people. It's the Southeast Farm in Beersford, and it was maize this year. And we're going to get rid of the end rows. We don't want that complication, and we're going to trim it and convert it to meters. Give us a nice square grid that we can play with. And then what we'll do is we'll generate a trial map. In this case, I'm using for simulation a simple 6-treatment, 4-replicate, randomized complete block design. We're going to superimpose that over the entire field, repeating it 180 times. So we get 180 simulated uniformity trials. And then we'll use the year monitor data to Krieg, or estimate, the plot, the yield at the center of the plot. And that will be our plot yield. That will be our uniformity plot yield. We'll pretend that this really happened. We did an experiment with corn. Yay, we can pretend we're statisticians. Right? And you can see the bar, and there's roughly about 4 or 5 data points that go into this. Okay. So now we have a map of 180 simulated uniformity trials. And we can take this randomization and see how it samples the non-uniform nature of a field. And we can look at that, and we can look at the different spatial structure. That myself with a laser beam. Okay. So there's a low yielding area, there's some high yielding areas, we've got different arrangements. So we can look at, for our purposes, undesirable layouts will confound this field variability with our treatment effects. Uniformity, we have no treatment effects. And this is the type of confounding we get, okay, where we have significant replicates and significant treatments because there's a field trend that is kitty corner to our blocks. And so we get that picked up in both the blocks and the treatments. We also have where it is parallel to the length of the replicates. And so we pick up treatment effects, but no replicate effects. Okay. These are errors. Right? There are no treatment effects. This, non-significant treatments, well, we got our blocking structure to work out nicely in that one. Our blocking structure didn't do much as in that one. Okay. So we're going to look at type 1 error. There is no treatment effect. Any trial that picks up a significant effect for treatments is a type 1 error. We would think that our nominal type 1 error rate, which we usually use at 5%, we would expect 5% of these trials, or 5% of 180. What we did achieve is 26 of these simulated trials gave us significant treatments. That's an achieved error rate of 14%. And so we're going to visualize these things looking at p-values. So we look at the distribution of p-values for these 180 trials. We see that it tends to be skewed toward low treatment values. We can also look at the accumulated empirical distribution function. And the uniform distribution, our nominal error rate will equal our achieved error rate. Okay. If it's skewed to the left, we have our achieved error rate is greater than our nominal error rate. So that's how we interpret these graphs. Shift to the left, we have a higher type 1 error rate than we hope. Okay. So achieved type 1 error rate is the error rate we get from the simulation. Our nominal rate is what we set our probability value to be. So now we can compare different randomizations. Okay. We have a nice little tool. We can look at a randomization, see how it performs over a large area. I might have got this rate because it's just bad luck. I got an undesirable trial. So we'll add 11 others for a total of 12. So let's say you're a consulting statistician, you get a researcher said, here's my 12 randomized complete block designs, I'm going to go out in the field with any problems. See any problems? I'm cheating because you can't see any problems with that. But this is what the simulations look like. The vast majority, seven of these 12, are skewed towards a high treatment probability. Others are skewed towards a low treatment probability. You might look at some of these and say, I don't like that randomization, throw it out. That would be what's called a simple restricted randomization. You restrict your choice from the whole possible world of randomized complete block designs. It's commonly practiced. Okay? but it's inefficient because you have to generate a bunch of randomizations and you have to recognize that there's a bad one. So let's look at the table. Okay, type 1 error rate of our first one is 14%. Number 12 gave us a 33, almost a third of the trials were type 1 errors. Can you tell? Well, I'll make it a little simpler. This is what our software does. It makes things a little simpler. Can you see it yet? Is there a problem? Do you recognize it? Well, can we make it easier? This is fairly easy. We have four treatments in the column. They're going to be confounded. They're going to be picked up as the same. This, we have this little symmetry that's hard to pick out. If you just glance at it and you don't look it over, but that is a symmetric pattern. There is a pattern in this randomization. And so we pick up error. Now, one thing I want to think about is the large sample theory, and the way of thinking about this is if you do 1,000 randomizations and you simulate it over the field, the large-scale behavior is a uniform distribution. If you do 1,000 randomized complete block designs over your lifetime and you have a nominal error rate of 5%, you will achieve an error rate of 5%. How many people are going to do 1,000 randomized complete block designs over a lifetime? A lot of times we're going to be reporting results of 10. And 10, in this case, we get one trial out of 10. So our achieved error rate is higher than our nominal rate. So one of the things that we do with this is we restrict the randomization that will give us those biases. Okay. And there are several systematic designs proposed. The degenerate one I'm going to look at is a completely unrandomized treatment and column are the same. Then we have our ordinary randomized complete block design, which I showed you earlier. A restricted agency is an ARM setting. We disallow treatments to be in the same columns, and you can specify how far apart they need to be. The next two, super valid and row column, are described in detail in the R.A. Bailey reference. And finally, there's a spatially balanced design. Harold Van Es, who's the current soil science president, has been promoting this. And they're basically, these work out to be column restrictions. There are no restrictions for the degenerate. The treatments is the same as the column. Randomized, any treatment can appear in any column. With our ARM setting, we restrict treatments being in the same column. Super valid, two treatments can appear in the same column, but they can't appear in the same blocks together. So there's a rule, row column, no treatments. It's like a Latin square. And then finally, the spatially balanced, no more than one treatment in the same column. And so we have examples of these. And again, this is just for completeness sake. We are also going to look at classes, where we take these basic randomizations and permute them. Now, degenerate, you permuted, it's still degenerate. Randomized complete block, you re-randomize. Our setting, you re-randomize completely. Row column, super valid. You can permute rows, you can permute columns, but you can't swap around in between at the angles. Okay? And with the spatially optimized layout, you can permute rows, but you really can't change anything in the columns that changes the spatial optimality. So here we look at our families. Well, our degenerate, you're almost guaranteed to have a type 1 error. There's the RCB we looked at. Some skewed left, some skewed right. Our, the adjacency, the row column, spatially balanced, all tend to skew to the right. They tend to favor low treatment significance, high p-values for treatment. The super valid gives us this sigmoidal curve. It's a different class. And one thing I want you to ponder, if you were going to combine 12 experiments and you were to get a significant treatment by trial interaction, which of these sets would you trust more as detecting a treatment by trial interaction? Right? Treatment by trial interaction, it's significant in one trial, not in the other. You're almost certain to get an interaction here where it doesn't exist. You use spatially balanced or some of the others, you have a more uniform class of randomizations. The disadvantage of the spatially balanced is there's less of them, so you tend to duplicate. And so we put them together as a class, and we can see the behavior of the class. And one thing I like about this that we get from the super valid is it crosses 50% at 50%. So it's a symmetric pattern. Well, this comes into play now because we also have to consider power. Trials that tend to favor low treatment or high treatment probabilities are going to be harder to detect significant differences. So we're going to get a higher type 2 error rate. We're going to ignore things. And so to simulate that, well, simulating type 1 error is easy. There's no treatment effects, so we have no significance. To simulate type 2 error, what I did is I had to decide what is a true effect. So we start out with the same set of data, and started with a very small value, about 1% of our yield. Add it to each treatment in turn. 4 minutes, okay. All right. We count the number of trials where we have a significant effect. If we don't achieve 80%, we increment. We keep doing that. So it looks like this. As we increment our effect size, we shift our probability to the left. But remember, the confounding spatial effects with treatment effects is also going to shift to the left. Now we get our pooled power analysis, and this is what it looks like. Our degenerate plan doesn't take anything. We'll skip that. Our three plans that tend to favor higher treatment probabilities also require a larger significance, a larger effect to detect significance. This is about 17 bushels per acre. We averaged about 200 bushels per acre. Give you an idea of the effect size. Randomized complete block designs can get some low numbers. The super valid gives you a nice compromise between type 1 and type 2 error. Okay. And so if we were talking about the recommended number of replicates, if we knew something about this, would we suggest a different number of replicates if we knew something about the nature of the randomization? Now, I'm going to skip this quickly because this is the detail of Van Ess's work, which is an average difference among treatment, and it's really a way of looking at the dispersion of treatments. Okay. And if I can go back and answer it, I will, but we're going to skip ahead to this. So this is roughly a number that gives us a dispersion, and we have two different options. There's a standard deviation of the difference among treatment pairs, and there's a deviations among the treatment pairs. And we put this into ARM software. And we have this measure, standard deviation across replicates, that gives us a fairly good predictor of our type 1 error rate. So we can use this as a measure to say this is a good randomization or this is a desired randomization. We have our degenerate one up here. We want to be away from that. We want to be in this part. We look at the distribution of these values, and we can see that the optimized designs tend to lie in the extreme. They are supposed to be the optimum dispersion. And so we're going to see that at the extreme end. The super valid tend to lie in the great center of mass of distributions. And these are references that go along with it. You can explore these different randomizations. And for those of you who came in late, this is the too long didn't read. How we take this spatial pattern, this random variable, take this randomization, describe it in such a way that we can predict what this is and what that is, and make better choices about our randomizations. I'm trying to con a mathematician into this part.
So we have time for one question. On the burning desire of the
I burned you guys out.